It is March 6th, 2010, 10 a.m. on the Central Coast of California.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIhosting.com.
And of course, it's time now for GeekSpeak. We're going themeless today, guys. And the reason we're going themeless is because we don't have time to use to do themes. We got to ask for pledges. We're moving too fast and talking too much. So I just want to let people know that right now is the time to consider supporting public radio with a larger gift of $500 or more. When you do, you'll be our guest at KOSP's Donor Dinner in Carmel Valley Ranch in Carmel or Oswald's in Santa Cruz. Pledge online right now. Make that pledge and support, help others support the station by doing a matching pledge. Call right now 1-888-777-1507. That's 888-777-1507. Call right now and thank you. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Keep in mind the views expressed on GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP. So the geeks today are Miles Elam. He's a, we normally say he's a slacker and political junkie, but right now, Miles, you're doing a lot of searching for jobs, and he's a Java developer, in case anyone wants to know. But and Al Luckow is a, well, you're a design guy, right?
Yep.
I'd say that's true. What have you been working on lately, Al?
Me? Just a bunch of stuff. UI design right now. UI is really kind of hot. Everything, all the new devices, they all need user interfaces.
Yeah.
So.
And there's a big push now for different types of user interfaces. I was doing a Google search on my iPhone the other day, and instead of at the bottom that normally used to say mobile, it says touchscreen. Mm-hmm. Like that's the actual version of the website, if you will, for the touch.
Yeah, a lot of companies are saying, hey, can you take a look at our UI and what would it take to convert this to touch-compatible UI? So
yeah.
There's a lot of people thinking about that right now. A lot of companies, they're evaluating their current software and saying, maybe we should switch our UI to just, be able to accept this new kind of device that's coming out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. I'm always glad to have your expertise on that subject matter. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by the University of Advancing Technology, a private university offering master's degree programs focused in advanced technology. More information available at uat.edu/masters. Let's go ahead and do some thank yous.
Okay.
Miles, do you want to read a thank you for us?
Yes, I absolutely would. We'd like to thank Jennifer from Santa Cruz, Trist from Carmel, and they both love Dr. Don, hate to miss her. Will from Carmel listens to Dr. Don, otherwise loves NPR as well. Jean from Pacific Grove, big fan of Dr. Don. Thank you all for your pledges.
Great. Let's go ahead and start doing some news, because that's why we're here, right? Al? Let's start out on the EG Nobel Prize or the Ig Nobel Prize. What the heck is this?
This is kind of a neat thing that I think everybody, especially our listeners, will be very interested to hear about. Improbable mm-hmm. Research is the name of the organization that sponsors this.
Improbable Research?
Improbable Research. And what they do is they promote research that makes people laugh and then think. You might say that here's an interesting quote that is something that they seem to repeat. The most exciting phrase to hear in science, the one that heralds new discoveries, is not eureka, but that's funny. So they look at all these things.
That's funny?
That's funny. you could see that's
right,
funny.
Right, the unexpected is what actually
right.
drives.
Yeah. Right. And so they kind of, give these Nobel Prizes, which they call them the Ig Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
And here are a few of the 2009 Ig Nobel Prize winners. For veterinary medicine, Catherine Douglas and Peter Rawlson of Newcastle University. For showing that cows who have names give more milk than cows that are nameless.
Great.
We have the Peace Prize to Stefan Bollinger, Stefan Ross, and Lars Osterhelwig, Michael Fai, and Beat Kubernali of the University of Bern, Switzerland, for determining, by experiment, whether it is better to be smashed over the head with a full bottle of beer or with an empty bottle.
Meaning which causes more damage?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Okay. Here's another one, the Medicine Prize, to Donald L. Unger of Thousand Oaks, California, for investigating a possible cause of arthritis of the fingers by diligently cracking the knuckles of his left hand but never cracking the knuckles of his right hand every day for more than 60 years.
So he did himself as a test patient. And,
yes.
And his hands, they're the same, right?
He came up with findings, but they didn't say what they were.
The findings are that it's the same. It doesn't cause arthritis. It doesn't do any mal effects.
Here's an interesting one. The Public Health Nobel Prize goes to Elena N. Bodner and Raphael C. Lee and Sandra Marigan of Chicago for inventing a brassiere that, in an emergency, can be quickly converted into a pair of protective face masks. One for the brassiere wearer and one to be given to some needy bystander.
This is in case of some kind of pathogen or something that would be bad for.
And you say, I have
pull off the bra cap and stick it on your face.
Yeah, here, take this. You know, and it actually
and it's functional
and it's functional. Yes. Right. And last, but of course not least, the biology prize, which goes to Fumiaki Takajuki, University Graduate School of Medical Scientists in Sagamihara, Japan, for determining that kitchen refuse can be reduced more than 90% in mass by using bacteria extracted from the feces of giant pandas.
Those are the Ig Nobel Prize winners this year for wonderful advancements in science that happen to be a little funny. Thank you very much, Al, for that. In a moment, we're going to talk about RAID and SSD. And after that, Al's going to tell us all about crazy Chrome font issue. But first, I want to ask you to go ahead and pledge right now. The KSP Pledge Drive is happening right now, the Spring Drive, and we are looking for your support for the station. Just to let you know that every year, every day, every week, every minute, we're on air supporting you, giving you wonderful news, information, entertainment, and a sense of community well-being and community involvement. And all we do is to ask you for your support twice a year. This is one of those times. It's time for you to pick up your phone. If you like what we do here, and I say in a kind of ridiculous way, because you're listening, which means you do like what we do. So give us a call. Support us right now at KUSP. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. We are looking for a large donation to help support other people calling in. So please do so. Call us right now with a large pledge, and you can make sure that multiple people call us and support us today. Of course, you can do it the geek way at kusp.org. Miles, what is up with RAID and SSD?
Well, one of the pushes for storage has been to solid-state devices, things like the Intel, the other manufacturers
out
there.
Mostly they're laptop-sized hard drives. They have no moving parts, and they're really fast access speeds.
Really fast.
And SSD stands for solid-state drive.
We're talking about five times faster than a typical hard drive, fastest hard drives.
And when your computer's on and you drop your computer, though it might break horribly, your data is actually going to probably be safe. Like, it's not a spinning platter that has little
I would not recommend that, but yes, in general, that is true. It is not
as susceptible. I've been dropping my hard drive regularly.
Yeah, it's not as susceptible to vibration as a spinning platter. There's no spinning, no spinning rust, as they call it, for a hard drive. However, one of the things that people like to do with hard drives is put them into arrays and have them work in what's called a RAID array, a redundant array of independent disks.
That's so what RAID stands for.
Yeah. So that if you sort of one hard drive dies, you still have three hard drives to pick up the slack, or 10 hard drives to pick up the slack, or whatever size your RAID array is. The problem comes in with the fact that SSDs are functionally different than hard drives. They use a technology called wear leveling, so that because SSDs have a problem where if you write 10,000 times at the same sector, for example, that sector will be unusable. They wear out.
Oh, interesting.
And so what the firmware does on the drive is every time the operating system tries to write to it, it gives it a new spot to write to.
So it makes sure it spreads that wear across the entire drive.
Right. But one of the problems with that is that RAID controllers don't know about that. Oh. They're used to hard drives where, I'll just write to the same sector every single time, no big deal.
Right.
Also, SSDs are so fast that the RAID controllers can't handle it. The RAID controllers are spec'd for, let's say, 350 megabytes a second.
Right.
And
that's fast.
which is fast, especially because a single hard drive would be somewhere in the range of 70 to 100, maybe 120 megabytes per second. So right. if you had a RAID 5 array of four drives, then that's going to be about what it's spec to. It's, you know, no real problem. SSDs, on the other hand, will do 300 megs a second out of the box, a single drive.
Right.
So putting four of them together means that you're going to be exceeding that speed envelope by a large margin. And the only RAID controllers that can handle that are going to be $50,000 to $100,000. So I'm thinking we're going to be seeing some products out there that are going to try to hit that niche.
But it's definitely not a home market niche. I mean, if you went ahead and made the expense of multiple SD drives, don't worry about at least striping RAID. The question I've got for you, though, is in a RAID where you've got a second drive, is that still important in SD?
You mean SSD mirroring? Drive?
Yeah,
you mean
mirroring.
RAID 1.
Yeah.
When you say second drive.
Sorry. Mirroring where you actually have two copies of the same data.
I don't imagine it would be. That one, I think all that you would need is you have a couple of SATA connectors right. on your motherboard. You connect each one up to
but it. But that would software. Be a RAID controller, and would it be using the that's low level?
That's assuming you use a RAID controller.
I see.
The operating system level one, I think, would be more
so that's
than
the way to do it. If you need RAID and you're doing SSD, then all you're really talking about is you're not talking about speed increase. You're talking about making the data safer by having two copies of it.
Right.
Which, again, it's not as dangerous on SSD, right? An SSD is just not as fault tolerant. I mean, is likely to fail on.
Is there a size limit?
I don't know if that's
limit?
True. It's different.
The electronics could fail, I guess.
They're also so new, we don't have long-term reliability on them as compared to hard drives. Hard drives, a lot of times, they'll fail in the first, 90 days?
Yeah.
And then if they don't fail then, they're probably going to be good for 5 to 9 years.
I guess my thought on an SS, if I put in really fast drives, solid-state drives, in a system, I'd go ahead and make sure my backup was really good rather than trying to do like in-computer redundant drives, right? Unless I was doing a server environment. Because it doesn't make any sense. You don't need the speed increase for RAID striping, so you might as well just have a good backup solution and let your machine be nice and simple.
Is there a size limit to the solid-state drive?
Solid-state drives right now, most of the size limit is people's budgets because
right.
they are a lot more expensive
than
hard drives.
You can
right
get
now.
2 terabyte drives.
But if you say they're more expensive, it tends to make me think they're harder to make. If
they're just not as popular. I think it's a volume thing. Uh-huh. I think that's what it is.
Speaking of volume, I just turned up my headphone volume.
Oh, so you can hear us now?
I was like just hearing you through my headphones. I'm like, oh, it's quiet today.
It's not just volume, but they're also a relatively new application of technology.
Right.
Because there's some of the same process as USB flash drive or RAM for that matter. They're similar types of things. But for example, it's not like RAM because you have to make it persistent, and mm-hmm. it's not like a USB drive because you want to make the capacities larger and you want to make them a lot faster than USB thumb drives tend to be. USB thumb drives tend to max out at about, 35 megas a second?
But the handy thing is you just don't have all these little springs and spinning motors and all that kind of stuff in these drives.
That's true.
It's basically like a brick of silicon that is just somehow smart enough to know it's a drive.
On a laptop that... It absolutely makes sense. On a desktop, especially if you're not in an area where you're kicking your desktop a lot, a hard drive is still, I think, the way to go.
You're assuming people are kicking their hard drive a lot?
Well, no, kicking their system. If it's underneath their desk, people like kicking it, causing
some
vibration.
To
it. Yeah, you shouldn't.
Actually, I do that.
You shouldn't be moving your desktop all that much and having it on having a lot of vibration.
So you're not supposed to kick your computer then?
Yeah, not so much.
Oh.
What about your pets? I get this list wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Who can you kick?
Right, but you. Were, but
oh,
we were talking
balls.
About speed. We were talking about performance. I'm sorry, or cost performance benefit. That I think is going to start changing soon. For example, Western Digital just announced their first SSD.
Right.
So, established hard drive manufacturers are moving into that realm. So, once that happens, you're going to start seeing prices.
So, I mean, 10 years out or so, maybe we won't be buying new platters.
I still think we will, but I think they'll be relegated to the roles that we now have for tape drives.
Right. Backup solutions that are cheap. Yeah, that's good. Cool.
Cheap
Thank
mass
you.
Storage.
All right. Al,
yeah.
It's your turn, and I'm quite curious. What's going on with this crazy Chrome font? I like talking about fonts.
Yeah, well, the thing is, as a designer, I use a lot of fonts, and I think people out there in general tend to like using a lot of fonts. And so you put all these fonts into your computer, but if you use your computer's default method of managing them, as soon as you get past a certain number, it becomes quite unwieldy. You want to be able to turn the font on and off, and you use different kind of font managers. Suitcase was a big
font
one.
Adobe Font Gosh, not Folio. Folio.
There's Fontfolio. There's Suitcase. There's you know, Fontmonger.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different font things, and you basically need to have something like that to manage your fonts, to be able to turn them on and off at will, or to sense when a document needed a font and it can turn it on because it knows you have it, all that kind of stuff. Well, there's been a lot of talk about this Google Chrome browser, and I've, you know, talked to people. Obviously, we've talked about how great it is, and it's fast and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I think, well, I'll download it. And so I try it, and every single one of the letters in the browser when it comes up is an A with a box around it.
It's not very functional.
It's not very useful. And as a matter of fact, it's completely useless. You can't do anything with it. And I thought, well, it's maybe my machine. You know, I have all these weird things going on in my machine. So I go in my other machine, and sure enough, it's doing the same thing. And I realize the one thing they have in common is I'm using this font management. And I go into Google's code.google.com and realize that everybody's having anybody who has a font manager can't really use Chrome. Which, you know, it seems obscure, but so many people use these font managers, and they're going to open up Chrome. It's going to be all messed up. I can't see anything. Every time I open up, it's all messed up. Well, this is why.
Okay.
And they haven't fixed it, and I've been following the blog thing where they talk about, you know, dealing with the bugs, and everybody is just, there's just one after another. Everybody's saying, I can't see anything in Chrome. It's all A's, you know. So.
All right. Well, it's good. I mean, it's good to know. So if you do have a font manager application on your machine and you're having trouble with Chrome, that's probably why.
That's it.
Yep. Well, thank you very much.
And it's their problem, by the way.
In a minute, Miles can talk a little bit about Comcast and a little bit about Flash and touch interfaces. And Al will go on with some of his great news. We're going to talk a bit about Google and some thoughts that Al's been having lately about Google. But right now, I want to ask you to pledge to KOSP. Support us. Now, some listeners actually wait like a year or more before making their very first pledge to KOSP. They're listening, they like it, it's a part of their life, and the first pledge drive happens, and the second pledge drive happens, and they don't do anything. And then they come on with their gift. And maybe they feel their gift won't make a difference. Of course, if everybody thought that, we wouldn't be functioning. We wouldn't be here. There's a question of affordability. If you think you can't afford to make a contribution, think about this. Many listeners contribute $10 a month. And that's the level that some people feel comfortable with, they can manage. To us, it's extremely important that the people that listen to KOSP contribute the amount they feel they can. And that's all we're really asking you to do today. The phone numbers to donate to KOSP right now are 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Of course, we're looking for right now, we're trying to do $1,000 during GeekSpeak. That's 36 more minutes of GeekSpeak. And right now, I think we've got 140 for the geeks, which means that you can start doubling what we already have by simple one phone call. Please do so right now.
Something that reminds me of this whole setup is having to be reminded, NPR, for example, we take it for granted. We hop into our cars, we go to work, or like me, sit at home, listen to NPR, and you just think, oh, it's just there.
Right.
But it isn't just there. It is funded by people like you. Luckily, with public radio, you don't have to listen to commercials every, you know, 10, 15 minutes. You only have a commercial, you know, twice a year. But something like that. But it still costs money. It costs money to keep the station on air. It costs, I'm sorry, I forgot what the actual dollar amount was that it costs for us to stay on air for every hour broadcast. And
it's $125 an hour.
$125
budget, an hour. You look at our 24/7 support, it's $125 an hour. And this year, 50% of that comes from our listeners.
That actually is cheaper than I would have expected. That is really cheap. That's a really great bang for the buck.
It's a good price.
But it does require that you call in now and pledge that dollar amount to get us up over that hump.
If independent, listener-supported radio is important to you, you can make a big difference in people's lives by making a challenge gift to KOSP right now. Maybe KOSP is worth as much to you as, say, your cable subscription. Your challenge of $42 a month will help us raise $500 from new members in this hour. Every pledge gets closer to our goal. Challenges get us there twice as fast. Please call us right now at 1-888-777-1507. And again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Of course, you can pledge at our secure website, KOSP.com. www.geekspeak.org. All right. Miles, what's going on with Comcast is a quick thing, but since you mentioned, since right. I just mentioned Comcast or cable bill.
Comcast, earlier we covered that they were doing IP version 6 trials, and
yes.
they should be lauded for doing this.
Yes.
They stepped up to the plate once again and started public DNSSEC trials, DNS security. One of the big issues with the internet is that DNS is wide open. It's one of the major flaws for people getting their information stolen.
Yeah, and if you've heard online someone saying, well, the internet's actually not that secure, there's a lot of really major security problems. The big one that all the geeks know about is DNS, and it's domain name service.
Yeah.
And basically the idea is if you look up kosp.org when you do your pledge, when you type that into your browser, the service that actually gives you the IP address, the actual address on the internet of what Cruise.io's machine is that's hosting KOSP currently, that information is delivered to you by the system called domain name service. And it's one of the services that is part of the backbone of the internet. And actually, it's not very secure.
When it was created, it was a time when the internet was really young. It was mostly researchers and students, and people weren't thinking about the security implications of it.
It's very much like email and why we have so much spam.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing.
It wasn't on anyone's radar to think about it. And no one really had predicted at the time that the internet would have become so mainstream, so much
when
part of our lives.
When we define these standards, we're talking about four or five universities and some government agencies talking to each other. People knew each other by name. That we're connecting. Right.
And so with this, it allows you to say, yes, the person that I am looking up, when I say I want eBay.com, that the IP address that you get back is in fact something from eBay and not something that some hacker has plugged into from some security flaw in the bind name server.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is something that if you are a Comcast user, you can look up information. I'll put it up on the website that you can go in and get the key information so that you can authenticate those servers.
Right.
So if you are a geek, I highly recommend you get on board. That way, when the rest of the population goes on there, the problems will be ironed out and everybody will be happy.
All right. Thank you very much for the information on Comcast. Al, you talked earlier, last week, we almost brought up this show, but you weren't on the show.
Right.
Getting rid of Google, what do you mean?
Well, Google is, you know, I just talked about the Google browser and, you know,
yeah,
I mean, I use Google. Sure. But the thing is, Google is doing so many things and people are putting so much trust into Google, and they're putting their documents, their pictures, their personal information, all these kinds of things. You know, there should be a way to escape Google. And a lot of people just sort of become part of the whole Google empire. But the thing you want to remember is that when you store all of your information in one place, it is convenient, but just try to remember what the word free really means.
Right.
Because there isn't really – nothing is completely free, even though you perceive it as being free. Yes, it's free in the sense that maybe you didn't give any money for something. But money isn't the only currency that's being dealt nowadays on the internet. So if you're going to put all of your faith into this company, you know, you have to remember all these things. But there are still alternatives out there. Personally, I like to kind of keep my stuff on my own computer drive. I mean, there's plenty of programs out there. You personally control them on your drive. Nobody can get access to them. They're there. You know, if you're storing things online, people are going to, you know, they're going to be out there.
But there's so many features and wonderful things.
There's a lot of wonderful features and
it's
things.
It's such sweet, sweet candy.
Right. But it's very much like TV. TV, we think of as free a lot of times, at least if you're going through broadcast over the air. But at the same time, we're not the customer. The advertisers are the customer.
Right.
We're the product.
Right.
And Google, it's the same way. That when you're using their services, it's not because they are serving you as a customer. They're serving advertisers with their AdSense program as
that's their customer.
You are the product whenever you put your document in there.
Right.
I don't necessarily think that's a horrible business model. I mean, I just think
to give examples for people that aren't familiar with using Google, right now I've got a calendar for Google that's GeekSpeak calendar, and all the geeks are administrators, and we all subscribe to our calendaring programs, and we see updates. So if I make an update saying it's a pledge drive this week, Miles sees that on his calendar, and that's a great feature, and that service is supported by Google. There's other ones out there, but it's so simple. Right? Well, the other one is documents. Last night I made a spreadsheet, an Excel, you know, a spreadsheet with calculations and figures about the property that Miles and I live on. I shared it with him, and he can edit it, and I can edit it. And how convenient is that? No emailing back and forth. In fact, we can edit at the same time with a little bit of complexity. That's convenient. Then there's this, you know, Twitter comparative, which is called Buzz, which allows you to do kind of a chatty thing. All of this is built into Google. There's a blog feature, right? They own Blogger. Mm-hmm. Miles and I have a blog that we communicate through. That's the same account. This, the simplicity of it's really nice. And then, of course, all my email for the last 4 years is on Gmail.
Yep.
So when I want to do a search for an email that somebody sent me, I don't delete anything. I save it. It's up on Gmail. All I need is a network connection, and I've got it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty convenient.
Yep. Google's got it all right in their little...
I'm trapped.
...little thing, yeah. But there are alternatives out there, like, for example, for search engines, which is the first thing people think of. You know, you might want to try Bing. I know it's Microsoft, and I'm not necessarily against Microsoft. I'm kind of more against one company owning everything.
You want some variety.
And I just, you know, Yahoo's still out there. Dogpile, I checked, is still there. There's cool. There's things like that.
Dogpile's a search engine. The search engine.
The mail, you can download a free mail client like Thunderbird and connect to Google Mail and download all your mail to your own hard drive and manage it, you know, on your own hard drive.
And you actually won't see their ads.
You won't see the ads. You can search it yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these things for Google Docs. There's Zoho Docs. There's another document thing. There's ways to pull your contacts out. You can export everything as V cards. There's an article that I found that it really details a lot of these things. It's quite interesting, was on Gizmodo, and we'll have that on geekspeak.org.
Great.
And it goes into detail on exactly how, if you decide maybe I want to go and look out and maybe try out Yahoo or Wolfram Alpha or Collecta or Mahalo or Dogpile or any of these other kind of search engines, you know, what are the things that are out there? And I kind of sort of encourage the diversity.
One thing that I do when using Google is that my personal email address didn't change to my Google email address.
Right.
I kept it to be personal, and I just forward that email address to Google.
That's good
so
advice.
So right now,
for
if you send
anybody.
Messages, emails, personal yeah. emails, and I've given you my card mm-hmm. or something, that email will go to me. Even if I leave Google, that email address is still
right.
valid.
That's a good advice for any kind of email.
Make sure to have your own email that you can own.
Yeah.
Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me are... Miles Elam and Al Luckow. And we're talking about news the entire hour of GeekSpeak today, but that doesn't mean you can't call in. Normally, I invite you to call in with questions and comments about technology. Today, we're asking you to call in with donations to the station to support the show. We are looking for a match pledge to help other people pledge to the station. We're looking for a $500 pledge to do that. You can double your money by doing that by letting other people see your contribution and that their pledge will be matched.
And we are now only $780 to reach our goal for this show. So far, great job, everyone. Please keep it up. We need your pledges. And a bunch of thank yous go out to Ken from Ben Lomond for GeekSpeak, Patricia from Pacific Grove for Dr. Don, David from La Selva Beach, who is a new member. And
hey, welcome.
Yes, and he's a fan of GeekSpeak. Thank you very much. And an anonymous from Palo Alto, who is also a new member. We need those new members. Please call in.
The phone numbers, of course, to call in are 888-777-1507. That's 888-777-1507. And it's at kosp.org, which, of course, is secure, and you can pledge that way as well. And I just want to let you know a little bit about behind the scenes. Al Luckow, who's a very good designer and has tons of corporations behind him, he just finished a contract with Apple. He's got more in the works, always busy, always well-desired, is here every week. He normally records free the USB, Crazy USB of the Week during the week. This one, I think it's a live one. He's here every week donating his time. There's no compensation for any of the geeks, right? So we're volunteering to do this because we feel like participating, well, personally, I feel like participating in the community is important to me. And I like the idea of being an active member of my community. And that's why I do this. And that's why Miles and I have been doing this for 9 years. We do this because, well, we love technology. We love helping people with technology. But we also love the idea, or personally, I love the idea of supporting my community with some kind of service that I can give to my community. And that's why I'm here every week. Miles, why are you here every week?
Oh, well, you know, I got nothing else to do on a Saturday. No,
you're a slacker, right? And moving on.
No, this actually has become a family. yeah. to come here to KUSP to do this, just as you were saying, was part of community. I remember this just being, oh, well, Lyle's this guy I knew, and he asked me to come in and do this show 9.5 years ago. And now it's just become this institution. It's what I do. This is
it's who, part of
it
who you
defines
are.
Who I am. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like listening to NPR, it kind of defines who you are. I mean, you're a part of a community. As you listen to KUSP, you see that, you hear that, you hear Dr. Don before us, you hear Johnny Simmons during the week, and tons of people that are volunteering their time to produce amazing music shows. You listen to KUSP, you know what I'm talking about. Call in. 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. All right, I promised some discussion of more of our topics, right? What are we talking about now? Flash. Oh, yeah. What's up with Flash and touchscreens and stuff? What's going on?
Well, something else that came up when people were talking about, oh, the iPad doesn't support Flash, the iPhone doesn't support Flash, something that people haven't really come to grips with yet is that all of those Flash movies that are on your computer use mouse overs. And use special clicks. They're not touch.
When you have your mouse and you move around on a web page, and the navigation or something changes when you have your cursor over it, highlights it, or changes to a different state. That's called a mouse over. And the idea is that that element gets changed or has an effect or has what's called an event in JavaScript and ActionScript. The event is on a mouse over, do this, right? And for a touch screen, you have no such thing as mouse over because you either are touching the screen or you're not touching the screen. Now, you can move your fingers around the screen, but normally that drags the screen around. It does a different effect normally on a touch screen. So what you're saying is all these Flash movies are actually kind of broken. In the sense that they were designed already for something for
right, they were designed for something different. They're not broken. They just weren't designed for a mobile device. They weren't designed for a touchscreen.
Yeah.
Like two different areas that people who do Flash development weren't even prepared for. There weren't any tutorials out there. That wasn't teaching people to get ready for it. So when people talk about, oh, there's no Flash, be sure that you know what you're asking for.
Right.
Because having Flash and then having, especially those websites that have just a Flash navigation,
yeah,
where you hover over a menu item to get to it,
you wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to use it. Right now, Apple has some hacks so that with CSS, like if it has a hover and you click on it, it'll show it. But you have to do something a little extra to it to make it work correctly. Most of those still have problems.
When you do have a CSS hover state that expands, is the Safari on the iPhone actually detecting that CSS and going, I'm going to do something special here? And is that to spec?
It actually does something a little special. If it also has a click handler,
uh-huh.
Then it'll handle it. So if you click on it, it does what it would normally do for the hover. And then when you click again, it does what is an actual click.
So the
it's actually doing something a little
hover.
Different than the desktop Safari.
And it's a little different than what the CSS spec says, right?
Right.
But is that okay because it's a different type of device?
Well, the thing is Apple could do something about it because they control Safari. They could actually do the code base. They don't have they don't have
Flash.
Right.
Flash is made by Adobe.
Right. And Apple and Adobe have had a
battle.
Tumultuous relationship even before the iPhone came out.
The other thing that people, I mean, the choice I've heard about Flash not being on like the iPhone has to do with its speed and performance. Do you think that's valid?
In a way, it's valid because, once again, all of those Flash movies, we're talking about an existing code base,
yeah.
It wasn't made with portable devices and touchscreens in
sure.
mind. So they are going to be, a lot of them are made in such a way that the dual core CPU that people have, that 2.5 gigahertz, 3 gigahertz, dual core, quad core, ends up slowing down their system.
Yeah.
You have that on a portable device, it's over. It's game over. You suddenly don't have control over your phone for 5 minutes while you're waiting for it to respond.
There is hope, though. Apple did announce that in CS5, they're going to have a converter. Adobe. Adobe will have a converter that will... it creates a workaround so that Flash apps can be converted into iPhone apps and iPad apps. Now, this is CS5, which doesn't exist at this point.
Creative Suite 5, Adobe's Photoshop, Illustrator, that package.
But you're talking about an app, right? Not a web widget. You're talking about an app.
This is an app that what it does is it allows developers of Flash applications to take their application in the development stage and convert it so that it will run on these other things. Now, this is something that Adobe has announced in their blog, and it's been talked about a lot.
nobody's
seen
it.
The details is a little. Yeah. No,
nobody's seen it. CS5 is not out yet, but they are saying this. So
they're definitely thinking about it. It's
right.
definitely an issue.
If they're able to do it to the point where you can convert Flash applications to things like iPad stuff and iPhone and touch screens, you know the kind of market that opens up?
Right.
Because it releases people from the SDK that Apple released.
Right.
So. Well, it doesn't release them, but it does tie them in, because you'll still need a developer license to put an app onto a phone.
Right.
But that's
assuming that we're talking about a non-web app. I mean, a lot of Flash apps are actually web apps, and all you'd have to do is convert them to JavaScript, and that's what you're about to say.
Right. Is the fact that right now it's talking about apples and oranges. You're talking about an actual app that runs on the system, just like you have EA Games writing apps for, writing full screen or fast frame rate apps on the iPhone.
Right.
So that, I mean, I don't think Apple ever had a problem with.
Right.
It was.
Are you saying that EA Games is not using their SDK? They're actually doing coding at a much deeper level?
No. Well, they're using OpenGL. Was it ES?
Oh, I see. So they're doing a slightly different thing than the out-of-the-box Apple solution.
No, they are. It's just they're not using any of the Apple widgets.
Right.
They're
hand-coding everything.
Yeah, they're using the GL language.
Thanks, Miles. Thanks, Al. Whose was that? That was Miles. All right, so Al, it's your turn. And I wanted to talk about this a couple weeks ago because you were very excited about news.
The
Newseum, actually.
It's funny. We just went to a play last night, mm-hmm. about newspapers.
That's right. And it's called Stop the Press. It's playing at UCSC. I think tonight's closing night. It's part of the my work, if you will, the students in the Digital Arts New Media program, the one that I work for, a few of them are doing this show. And it's about new media, and it's about the death of newspapers, and it's called Stop the Press, and it's at the Experimental Theater at UCSC.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, that had a lot to do with the death of newspapers and all that, mm-hmm. The media and everything. But there's a website called, it's at the Newseum.
Mm-hmm.
Newseum.org. And this thing collects every front page of, well, they say 827 front pages of newspapers from 76 countries. I imagine
that's
changes.
That's, and they get mailed to them and then they scan them?
Right.
Or?
Well, they somehow have them. So you go to this website, newseum.org, and you can look at the front page of any of these newspapers current.
Right.
So you go in there
today,
in the morning. You can look at
today's paper.
Yeah, I just go in there right now, and they have a map, and they just all these little dots on it. You click it, and then now I'm looking at, the Leaf Chronicle in Clarksville, Tennessee.
And there's the cover.
Yep. Or you could, it shows you the whole cover.
If you're in D.C., I highly recommend the Newseum. A few months ago, you might remember that I was in D.C. and we did a show from there. And I did go to the Newseum. There's a picture on our Facebook, on the mm-hmm. Geekspeak Facebook page, which you can get to from geekspeak.org, of me in the Newseum elevator. The way it's a walk down mm-hmm. museum. You actually get in the elevator, full glass elevator right up to the top floor, and then you walk all the way down. And it's an amazing retrospective on news, on the press, and on news gathering in general. It covers radio and papers and, of course, television. Really wonderful, amazing place. And on the top floor, which is an outside, there's a whole bunch of newspaper prints. They actually print a whole bunch of the covers of newspapers every day and put them behind glass and out on the street as well, and you get to see, that day's newspaper, which is a very strange experience, of course, because it's like Tokyo's newspaper. It's like, well, I went there in the morning. How did this get here? And, of course, all these papers are actually sending the Newseum their cover mm-hmm. when they go to print,
right.
and they're putting them online. And
it looks like they're digital.
Them.
When I open them up, they've got crop marks in them, so it appears to be coming straight from a digital source.
Yeah.
But it's, you think about newspapers and what they represent and how everybody says they're dying, and I wonder where this fits, in
that
whole
thing. The local paper represents your local community pretty well. I mean, it's hard to have an online experience that's anything like that.
Right.
I agree. When you see, I remember a while ago, the Press Banner, which is the Scotts Valley and San Lorenzo Valley paper, mm-hmm. Record, if you will, we had a tree down on Alba Road, which is where Miles and I live, and there's pictures of the tree down. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get that in an online experience, at least in a cohesive way that also talks about the local volleyball team winning.
You get it if you search and you build, but it's something about getting something that's just sent directly to you, or you pick up and it's about this area. You picked it up in this location because it covers this location.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it somehow more
tangible.
So you
don't think the paper's dead?
Yeah, I don't think so. I really don't. I worked in newspapers. I worked at Good Times years ago, and
I was the Good Time front cover designer.
Yeah,
for
I did
years,
a lot of front covers then, the early '90s.
I remember when you and I kind of first met. We started talking, and you're like, I think I know your dad because I think he was on a cover I did.
Like, yeah, that's yeah, probably, it was. Did. It was your dad. And remember, we found it too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I have a box of old, you know. But yeah, I think the newspaper is really something that people really like. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's changing its format a little bit.
Okay, Al. But 2 weeks ago, you're talking about how the iPad is not laptop. It's actually more like a magazine / newspaper remover. You don't think it's going
to
be newspaper?
Newspapers are more to me, it's more of a commodity, and magazines are something that I think is a little more, has more value. There's more picture. There's more. It's more of a, you know, a timelessness mm-hmm. to it. Whereas newspapers are like instantly kind of, I want to know what's going on right now. And magazine, I might look at a magazine for a few months. You know, I might just the articles don't necessarily go out unless it's People or something, and you want to find out about Angela Jolie or what she's doing. I mean, if you're that kind of person, well, maybe, you know, I think of that as like a newspaper kind of. Now, who wants to keep that stuff?
Yeah, I'm going to act as a curmudgeon because I'm talking as someone who has a subscription to the Sentinel online because they're trying to sell the newspaper, and I'm like, I don't want the paper. I don't want the physical. I already have a network connection. Why can't I just look at it online? And I'm realizing, even though I did that to support the Sentinel, I don't ever read it. Not that I don't read the Sentinel, but I don't read it through going to their site and then reading it just by that. I get newspaper stories that are linked to them because I go around looking around at different sources. And every time I hear newspapers, like I said, I'm going to be the curmudgeon here. Every time I hear newspapers talk about, oh, we're getting our revenue taken away by, you know, Craigslist because they took away our classified ads and you need to find our revenue stream for how this is going to be. Where were those newspaper vendors before Craigslist started? Why didn't they make that transition? Why weren't they the pioneers? I think that's more of the issue of why they're struggling right now.
Because they were business people, and Craig didn't start with business. Yeah. He just made a big list for his friends. I mean, I guess that's why. Well, thank you, Miles, and thanks for supporting
like I said,
paper.
I'm being the curmudgeon here. And I do have a subscription to the Sentinel because I do believe that there is a place for journalism, that it does need to be funded.
Okay, and I have a subscription to KOSP, if you will. I believe it needs to be funded.
Yes, the exact same.
And that's another interesting one. I mean, you could get most of the Sentinel for free, right, online?
Right, but KOSP had the forethought to put on a technology program like GeekSpeak for us to talk about the newest stuff that people can't hear about when, you know, otherwise.
It's true. There's not many other places you can hear about us. And we wouldn't be doing the show without KOSP, of course. Even if you're listening to the podcast, and there's lots of people listening to our podcast, please feel free to call in and donate to the station. We'll take your pledge, even if you're not listening live, even if you're not in the area. If you like what KOSP is producing, then call us up. Right now, we've got, it's a little reflection, we've got $460 left to go in this pledge. That's only 10 minutes to do. That's just four calls from people that want to do $10 a month. It's not a lot of money. If you think about how much money you're spending on coffee or tea every day, that's pretty good. You know, $10 a month, you get a lot of, you can't get very much coffee for that, but you can get a lot of KOSP. You can get 24/7 of KOSP. And KOSP, of course, has tons of programming that you listen to regularly. Give us a call. Even if you've only been listening for, you know, 6 weeks and you're thinking, God, this station's so cool. You're new to the area. Now's the time to contribute. Now's the time to be part of the community and support us.
And if you're the type of person that doesn't like the quick little snippet, oh, you need $460 in the next hour. If you'd like to be more relaxed, think more long term, we have a drive goal of $80,000. That's our goal. So just keep that in mind. That's what we're working toward.
And that's possible because we have listeners like you that know that KOSP is important, and they call in. So be one of those people that calls in and supports the station. You can do so by calling 1-888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Or, of course, you're listening to GeekSpeak, you probably have a computer, and it might be working. Give us a call online or visit our website, kosp.org. And, of course, all the news and information you're learning about today's show, you can go and learn more about it at geekspeak.org.
And if your computer isn't working, then feel free to call us next week.
and we'll make it work.
Right. And so we'll just have the help on the layaway plan. You can help, you know, just put that money down on KOSP, and then we will help you out next week with getting your computer back up to speed.
What's going on with Mars Space News? Oh, well, one more time, 888-777-1507. We really could use your pledge right now. We're looking for $120 a year. That's $10 a month. It's not that bad. We can automatically deduct it from you every month, so it doesn't even show up very much on your bills. It's a simple way to support the station in a regular format. You listen casually. You can donate and easily have donations happen regularly for you. We'll schedule that for you. Again, the 888-777-1507. And Miles, one thank you?
Yeah, a couple thank yous. Mary from Felton, loves Geek Speak, and Dr. Don. Peter from Morgan Hill, Dr. Don, and a lot of the music programs, especially the classical and jazz. Mm-hmm. And Anonymous and Carmel, loves it all.
Loves it all. That's what we like to hear. What's going on with Mars?
Well, we've been covering the Mars rovers for years.
Spirit and opportunity.
Yeah, they've been, you know, the little rovers that could.
Yes.
You know, they just keep going.
Trucking.
Although one of them having a problem, it's kind of stuck. They're thinking, yeah.
It's outlived its performance by like 9,000%.
Right.
I think it was supposed to get there for like 40 days functional. It's been like 4 years.
Yeah, but it's stuck and it's got winter coming and it may not survive the winter. It doesn't have enough power to hunker down and get out of the way. So designs are coming in for what do we do next? What's the next generation of rover?
Why design anything different? Why just send more of those?
Is there any way these rovers could become self-aware and start replicating themselves and colonizing Mars so that at some point we go there and they're just full of all these rovers?
You know, it's people like you that spawn Cylons.
Man.
Cylon maker.
So their design that NASA's been working on is a tumbleweed rover. Instead of a rover that's going to try to avoid the pit stop, try to avoid having the wind blast up against them and get knocked over, just embrace it. Just have these sensors in a spherical ball that just gets thrown around, and the kinetic energy would then have a charge.
The roving aspect is actually quite important. We want it to move around to be different locations, so we get different looks and different perspectives on what Mars is.
It's like Rover Akito.
Right, but instead of having... And the rovers have done a specific job that is very useful, and that model isn't completely out of date, but you had two rovers go out there. Why not instead have a lot of, like, thousands of these little tumbleweeds that are just floating around and going wherever the prevailing winds may take them.
They'll all be blown to the
devil
same
may
spot.
Care.
They'll all be blown to the same spot, though. It'd be so sad. This little alcove of 50 tumbleweeds.
Well, see, that's why you drop them in different parts of the planet.
Ah, okay.
If they all converge in the same spot.
That's something new.
They probably would all end up
there. That's
where
we know that something's important.
That's where the aliens are.
That's good. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, the winds, you know, they'll all end up in a corner somewhere, all these round rovers stuck next to some mountain. They're all.
So would the sensor array function? Everything? I mean, the camera would be kind of hard to interpret.
A camera would be, but in terms of taking soil samples and the like as they're going through, that would be, you know,
that's cool.
Temperature readings in different areas.
Tumbleweed robots.
There's a lot you can do just by being there.
Well, since we're talking about robots and Al's here, let's go on a different subject. No, Al, please. Robot update?
Let's see. Well, there was the one thing that we were talking about earlier that was... Who's the one?
Well,
the
robot, the education workforce robot?
Yeah, the Japanese are, again...
Of course, the Japanese. They're always the robot leaders.
Have decided to have robots teaching their students in classes. So the robot comes out there and actually is now giving lectures.
That's wrong, I have to say. Wait, so what you're saying is that the instructor, the actual instructor, records their lecture and imports it into a robot, and the robot then does the lecture.
Yeah, well, apparently, I mean,
all you need to add there is a whole bunch of cameras for every student to have a camera, and they can be at home. And then you've got a completely virtual
experience.
I've
seen this joke actually in movies before. The professor just has a tape recorder playing, and then all the students have their tape recorder they left at their desk.
Well, the thing looks like a person and stands there and gestures. The robot isn't in like a normal school. It's in like the Japanese. It's like Japanese MIT. It's called.
Right.
It's called NIT.
So it's more of a research kind
of project
itself.
Nippon Institute of Technology, and basically they deal with technology. They do all this stuff. To them, it sort of makes sense to go and try to make a robot and at least have a class where there's a robot in it, you know, just because that's what they do is they study robots and make robots. So the whole class – but the weird thing is the whole class is taught by this robot. It just stands in front of there, in front of this entire lecture hall and just gives this entire
presentation.
Lecture.
Just like the President's Hall at Disney.
Yeah, or Chuck E. Cheese.
Or Chuck E. Cheese, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so it's like Chuck E. Cheese, I guess. Yeah, well, okay.
If they put a Chuck E. Cheese skin on it, what a wonderful thing.
Well, this whole robot teaching thing is backed by $44 million US dollars.
I mean, not U.S. converted U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Yeah. We've been talking about pledging to KOSP during this hour, and we've been thanking people that have pledged. But I haven't mentioned that we do give you thank you gifts. I mean, we actually physically give you a gift normally with our name on it to help promote the station, but also to make sure that you kind of show that you support the station, that show that you're a part of our community. So we have thank you gifts of like a really great aluminum water bottle, a reusable grocery bag. These are at different prices. The one I want to talk about right now, though, is because we have $170 left to go on the show. We've got 4 minutes. That takes one call of $180 or simply $15 a month, and you get this wonderful book called All Cakes Considered. It's a cookbook, of course, and I got to tell you, it's beautiful, and I'm kind of addicted to cookbooks. It's kind of food porn for me.
He can quit anytime he wants.
I can, but I'm not going to. So this book is delicious. There's a pound cake that looks scrumptious. The Naughty
Bunt.
Senator.
Yeah, and I live next door to him, so if he cooks stuff, I get to eat it.
So call in right now. We'll give you a wonderful cookbook as a thank you gift, $180. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507 or kosp.org. A couple thank yous, Miles?
Yes, thank you to Terry from Santa Cruz. Thank you for your gift, and thank you, Peg from Capitola, who is a new member, who loves Geek Speak. Thank you very much.
Love new members. If you haven't contributed to KOSP before, please do so. I guarantee it'll be a good experience. The first time I contributed, I think I turned 17 or something like that, I contributed to KOSP. I felt like I owned the station. I felt like it was part of what was part of my life. And it's in a very different way. I've got to say that if you haven't donated to KOSP before, do it. You will not regret it. Do the amount that you can. We, of course, would love a $15 a month donation. The phone number is Al's about to do his craziest USB of the week. The phone number right now, 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by the University of Advancing Technology, offering a master's degree programs for geeks to become innovators of the future. uat.edu/masters. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Al, what's going on with Crazy USB this week?
Well, usually I try to prepare something and make it a little more interesting and that sort of stuff because, it's just crazy USB things.
I love it. You do like a disco ball and you got dance things. It's great.
But this particular item is, as I'm going to talk about, it's not crazy. It's actually just completely unfathomable.
So you couldn't think of some way to
There's
make fun of it.
There's nothing to do to this that makes it more ridiculous than just telling you what it is.
And if you call in right now, we'll tell you. No, just kidding. Yeah.
It's the USB finger dance mat. What this is a little mat.
It sounds wrong.
Well, you know those games they play at arcades?
Like Dance Dance Revolution. Where you like dance on
yeah,
pads.
Yeah, you dance. You have
it's great. You get your whole color. Body moving and you have to touch little
pads.
Well,
this is a little pad that's connected to a USB cable. It plugs into your computer and it has little lights that dance up. And you put your fingers on the colors as they light up. And it comes with a little cardboard cutout that you kind of poke on the top of your fingers that looks like a woman dancing or a man dancing.
No, so you and wear so like you, a little puppet on your finger.
Yeah, as if you don't have enough ways to enhance your carpal tunnel experience. This is a new thing that
if you can
try.
About picking up the guitar, don't. Get this instead.
Yeah. You can do just as much damage with this as you can do with typing, I think.
Thank you very much for the crazy or unfathomable USB of the week, Al. We're here every week on KOSP to support you. Please support us. The phone number is 888-777-1507.